Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we're way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Welcome to On the Continent, where we bring you the biggest stories from all around European football. I'm Dotun Adebayo.
I'm Andy Brassel.
And I'm David Cartledge.
On today's show, we recap last night's chaotic German Super Cup, take a close look at Portuguese superstar João Felix, and we ask, can Inter challenge Juventus? And remember, if you've got some questions or things you'd like us to talk about, then you can email us at OTC@footballramble.com. So, Andy, should we start with the German Super Cup then? The result perhaps was not unexpected.
It wasn't, but the actual content of the game was something else entirely. I mean, I think it was a Super Cup that no one really wanted. There's been a discussion in Germany in recent days over whether it's something that could be shaved from the calendar entirely. I mean, I do feel that people think that about a lot of football at the moment, just because there's so much of it. And a lot of games that, I guess, aren't league games pop up and you're like, God, is this something we really have to deal with at the moment? Both teams have been beaten at the weekend, Bayern and Dortmund. Bayern surprisingly losing at Hoffenheim, and fatigue definitely playing a part in that. And Dortmund, I suppose it was an unsurprising surprise, them losing at Augsburg, because that is the thing they do every so often. But the result, even though you look at 3-2 to Bayern and you think, well, that's a fairly lively match, it doesn't actually tell even half of the story, because Bayern were far and away the better side in the first half. They could have been 3 or 4 nil up, really, quite comfortably. And it was only 2-1 because Julian Brandt got a goal back when it was 2-0 just before the break, which was completely against the run of play, Julian Brandt's goal. And interestingly, I read a stat, I think it was from our friend Archie Rintoul, who was saying up until Julian Brandt scored that goal towards the end of the first half, the last 17 goals in matches between Bayern and Dortmund at the Allianz Arena had been scored by Bayern. So it is Dortmund's dark place. They have difficulties there. And I think even though they've lost the Super Cup, they were excellent after the break. Bayern struggled to really regain their momentum. They've made some changes to the team and stuff. But I kind of feel the fact that they were able to go to Dortmund... able to go to Bayern, sorry, and at least for some of it, go toe-to-toe with them feels like a step on, because there's been a massive mental block about Dortmund going to Bayern.
Do you not think that's been even more of a concern, though, that Dortmund were excellent for a long period and they did go toe-to-toe with them, but they still lost? That's going to mentally, surely hit them.
Well, and they had the chances to win, and there was that one big chance when it was back to 2-2, and Haaland went through. And it's funny you say about that sort of not being able to quite get it over the line, because everyone's talked about Manuel Neuer being back to his best, 2014 World Cup Manuel Neuer, and that save he made from Haaland at 2-2 when he went clean through. But I don't know if he kind of made that save partly by reputation.
Yeah.
It's still a chance that Haaland should have scored, even though it was an excellent save.
And he was very good as well, I thought, Haaland. It's funny, every game, I think, you think you know Haaland, but he always, I feel like every game he does something new, and you see just that little bit extra from him.
He's so developed, yet so raw.
It's frightening. It's frightening where he's going to be in the next 2 years. How good is he going to be then? And he's definitely not going to be a Dortmund then.
No, he's not. Of course, lots of people talking about Jadon Sancho as well. Him and Roman Bürki didn't play in the Super Cup because they're ill, not coronavirus still. There was actually a Swedish newspaper that argued that the Sancho illness was faked, and he cried off to try and... accelerate a transfer to Manchester United.
I think that rumour started on Man United Twitter.
I bet it did.
Sources.
Rumour with a capital R.
I think Dortmund are an immensely frustrating team and club. Look, we all admire what they do with young players and the way they operate in the market. They make unbelievable money from players they sell on. I think it's a frustrating club, though. I think it's a frustrating... It must be difficult at times supporting them, I think.
I think, funnily enough, the most frustrating thing for a lot of local fans of Dortmund and a lot of those who go to the games on a regular basis normally is the fact that they feel that Dortmund have developed to become, in a global sense, maybe not what the fans or the match-going fans feel they should be. There are some fans who believe that, you know, Dortmund's about working class values, about soul, and about the support in the stadium, about the yellow wall. And again, yellow wall's a relatively new term that's been coined. But if you look at them post 2013, post the Champions League final with Bayern, they sort of, I don't know, charmed not just London on that week before the Champions League final, but charmed the world, really, didn't they?
Yeah, they were, you know, I hate to say this because I think it's such a bad term.
Go on, say it.
Yeah, they were the hipsters team. Yeah. And things move on, as we know.
I thought you were going to say everyone's second favourite.
Okay. I feel terrible for using that term, but yeah, it's my terrible vocabulary, clearly. But no, I think, and that obviously moves on. So there's a new team now. I guess it's Atalanta right now, where everybody's second team. And I don't know, they're in a funny place, Dortmund. Like you say, I when everybody looks at them, they look at their support, and I can completely understand that, why they would be frustrating from some fans.
But I think the fans are frustrated, some of the match-going fans are frustrated, because they feel that the club, sort of because of global demand, has become like a mini Bayern. Yeah. Because of course you think about those, the Haaland and Sancho, and now to a lesser extent Bellingham and Reina being front of house. But as we said on here before, you don't buy players like Hummels and Emre Can, and their salaries, and Thomas Meunier to a lesser extent, who had a dreadful miss during the Super Cup, when he absolutely cuffed loads over the top when it was 2-2. You don't have that to finish second. You know, you don't have those guys on the wage bill to just tread water. And Emre Can wouldn't have, if they'd have said to him, come back to the Bundesliga, second place every season, it'd be magic. I mean, he's been playing, you look at his background, the clubs he's been playing for, he's not come to finish second.
Yeah.
So it is a difficult thing to hit because you've got to stay true to those values, and yet you're expected to compete with a team who are almost not competable with, really, because you look at their financial might compared to Dortmund, and even though, you know, and Dortmund first won the league under Jurgen Klopp in 2011, and, you know, it was a favourite phrase, wasn't it, how they had a lower wage bill than QPR. Obviously part of that was to do with the wage bill that QPR were running at the time, which was absolutely horrendous. But, you know, they've moved on from that. They can't say anymore. You know, you look at someone like Marco Reus. He's maybe a kind of symbol of how they're caught between two stools. I mean, he came back and into this game. He'd been out injured since February, played his first game in, I think it was 253 days, started his first game in 253 days. And they've kind of moved on. They've moved on from him a little bit because I don't think they're especially reliant on him anymore because they couldn't rely on him because he gets injured all the time. But they're just sort of reaching for something that's not quite reachable. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And how much, you'll know more than me on this, but how much does the coaching choices that they make have to play in that? Are they making the right choices? Because we're looking, I can already see now the discontent.
Well, you could argue that Lucien Favre is their Niko Kovac because they, maybe that's a bit harsh on Lucien Favre because he's done good work wherever he's done, but he's that nearly but not quite guy. But, you know, you look at Bayern and they're double under Kovac. They won that double despite Kovac, not because of him. And the way they went into last season, Bayern, with Niko Kovac, wasn't a reflection on their satisfaction with his work. It was a reflection on the fact they didn't feel there was anyone better out there.
Yeah.
And with Favre, if you're going to pay him off, I mean, Lothar Matthäus, who's a bit of an inconsistent pundit, it's fair to say, on German television, despite his playing career, came out and said after that Dortmund-Bayern game, I should say, post-lockdown, where Bayern won and virtually stitched up the league, he was like, well, I should go for Niko Kovac because it was just the biggest name he could think of out there. But the club realised there's no sense in that. You know, we need to be making a step forward. And, you know, winning is nice, and winning the Bundesliga would be very nice for Borussia Dortmund. But in terms of, as going back to what you were saying, David, that model of developing players, that's where the coach is super important. I mean, it's not so much if we appoint the wrong coach, like maybe we'll have a bit of a shit run, because, you know, Dortmund had a bit of a shit run before Christmas last year, and that stopped them from being in a position to win the league. I mean, they were level with Schalke at the winter break. But if the development of those players' stunts, is that an issue?
Is the team too youthful? Is one big question. At the moment, you don't win anything with kids, do you? I never said that, by the way.
I don't think it's Alan Hansen. I think the kids aren't the problem. I think you have to look at senior players. And I do think you have to look at the coach.
I think it's the coach.
I don't know what you think, David, but they concede the same goal over and over and over again. You look back at the one against Augsburg last week, and, you know, the one thing you can count on in German football life is, you know, death, taxes, and Daniel Caligiuri scoring against Dortmund. But that ball over the top for a 32-year-old, albeit a very good 32-year-old, to score his customary goal, how can this keep happening to them?
Isn't that just identity and mental block, no matter if you keep changing the coach? It's just there at that club, and it takes somebody special to lift it. And that kind of brings me on to my next point. Next summer, say they sell Sancho for 120 million.
Okay. They could still sell him this summer.
Yeah, they could. They could. Yeah. Wait, say they don't. Say they keep him for 4 more. Yeah. They sell him.
Yeah, presume Manchester United's ears remain gummed when they listen to how much he's actually going to cost.
Buy a replacement for lower cost, and then why don't they put their money behind, say, Nagelsmann or Marco Rose? like an actual coach who could develop those younger players. Because I feel like they're kind of like what PSG were doing. They just weren't getting that top coach, that right coach who could clearly move them on. They were just getting somebody just under the top tier.
Yes.
So why don't Borussia Dortmund do that? Instead of putting the money behind the player, let's just say, maybe it's the coach. We've got a nice squad here. We've got lots of exciting young players. Yeah, let's get an exciting young coach.
But Lucien Favre has done nothing wrong, is what you said a moment or two ago. Wasn't it, Andy?
No, I wouldn't go that far.
Oh, right. Okay.
I think he's someone who can take you to a certain point, but he can't take you beyond that certain point.
I think the aspirations of Dortmund, if they are genuine in terms of wanting to dominate in Germany, then I think they have to get somebody like Nagelsmann. Otherwise, they're going to keep hitting the same wall, conceding the same type of goals.
Yeah.
Players are going to keep hitting the same ceiling as well. And also as a player, maybe Sancho, maybe Haaland look at it. And yes, of course, they're going to go at some point. They're going to leave at some point. But maybe they look at it as well. And they're not really inspired by what they're seeing as a coach. They'll just see it. They'll continuously see Dortmund as a shop window, a potential stepping stone. If Nagelsmann comes in, maybe he could change that and say, right, we're going to be the best. We're going to be one of the top elite clubs in Europe now.
It's a really interesting point. I wonder what will happen next for Nagelsmann, because clearly Bayern is a door that's shut for him because of what's happened with Hansi Flick, despite the fact he wore a red coat to several successive games in a come and get me plea when he was still back with Hoffenheim.
That's the way to do
it. I think it is the way to do it. But I think if you look at Nagelsmann, I don't know what you guys felt, but I felt when they got to the semi-final of the Champions League, rather than me thinking, well, this is a brave new dawn for Leipzig and they can go on so much further than here, I felt this is the ceiling. If you don't get experienced players, and they've no interest really in buying experienced players, they want to buy 20, 21, 22-year-olds, fatten the calf, sell them on. Without those experienced players, you don't go on and win trophies. Now, going back to your point, Dortmund, people like Dortmund have looked at that, like we said, in bringing in Hummels and Jan. And it's important, not just in the results, but in developing those players, I think, to have those established pros around them who've done it at the top level. So whether you're there to sell players or whether you're there to win trophies, those players are important, period. But I just wonder with Nagelsmann, especially as last season petered out, if there was a bit of him that thought, how much further am I going to go here? Because we know he's an incredibly ambitious guy.
Let's come back to Dortmund on another occasion. And we will revisit it, no
we
doubt.
Will.
No doubt.
Ich glaube es war Reus, ich weiß es nicht. Sag es mir. Warte, die Zeitlupe kommt. Warte kurz, warte kurz.
So, as you can see, by the way, obrigado, Andy.
Nada.
Obrigado, David. As you can see, I've been learning some Portuguese. And let me try some of my Portuguese on you.
To fit in with our new ruler.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
So, el mapa de calor de João Félix contra
Granada.
La Granada.
You know what? You've been reading off those Spanish websites again, Dotton. Honestly.
Not bad though, eh? Not bad.
It's all right.
Bad. I haven't got a clue what I said, so you might want to explain it.
Yeah. Oh, I love the way you look at me, guys. Well, of course, well, David wants to wax lyrical on João Félix and his start to the season with Atletico.
I can see why.
And we need to. But of course, he dominated their first game of the season against Granada in a way we'll talk about in a minute. But there's this really bizarre story with Granada's sponsor, who we won't mention here. They're an online betting company. They did, or whoever they left in charge of social media did a heat map. What they said was a heat map, as you say, of João Félix against Granada. And it was a heat map done in the shape of what can only be described as a phallus and a pair of buttocks.
Well, and hold on, not only described, I described it in a different way, but you carry on.
I will. I've started digging this hole and I'm going to carry on. And Granada, understandably, are not that happy with their main sponsor. They put out this very annoyed statement saying, we'll defend the institution by any means necessary, this institution of 89 years standing, etc., etc. But what on earth were they doing there?
It was just wild, that sort of thing to do. But that's what the nature of social media. Somebody did have that idea and thought, oh, this looks good, but
now or never.
Yeah, yeah. So no. they were fucked inside 90 minutes, and then also fucked after the game. So it was a bad deal.
Was that the point the sponsors were trying to make?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Was,
yeah? And does everybody get that point? Do all the fans get that point?
Because, I think that's clear.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was very literal. Andy's been really polite about it.
Clearly, the club gets the point.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
And did they disagree? Is that why they're considering legal action?
Yeah, they're pretty pissed off. I mean, they arrived at Atletico as league leaders. They'd won 2 out of 2. Mm-hmm. But Atletico, obviously, after their Champions League exertions, it's strange because that match, I do wonder, David, if we go backwards to the quarterfinal against Leipzig that we sort of touched on in the last section, mm-hmm. the way João Félix came on and grabbed that game by the scruff of the neck, is that going to be a turning point in his Atletico career where he says, okay, Simeone's way is Simeone's way, but this is my team now?
Look, you'd hope so. You really, really would. But you don't get anybody more, you know, thick-skulled, pig-headed than Simeone. So to change his mind... Look, I mean, come on. If he hasn't changed his ways after Champions League final defeats, failing to, you know, get into the top two of La Liga, he's not going to change it for a little Portuguese kid who looks like a surfer, you know? that ain't going to be the way. So, but it should be the way. Let's clarify that.
And tell us more about his performance against Granada.
He was just sensational. It was, you know, the best compliment I can give to him, there was one particular pass in which he set up a goal. There's only Lionel Messi who I've seen pick that type of pass. That sort of pitch pass where it looks like there's no angle and there's no, but the arch on the pass that Felix produced was sensational. It was ridiculous. It's one of those, like when Messi just picks it up maybe 25, 30 yards from goal, and there's a player maybe on the back post and he just manages to put it in the exact spot, the only place that it could be. And Felix did exactly the same here. And that was just one thing. He was everywhere. He was assisting, provoking penalties, running the team in a way that prime Griezmann was last. And they always looked upon João Félix when they brought him in to be their new Griezmann. And I think that's a lot to take on considering how influential Antoine Griezmann was there.
Why wasn't he playing like this last season, João Félix? If he had been playing like this last season, the entire European continent would have been watching his game and he'd be getting offers from all over the place.
Two reasons. I think first and foremost, he came from Benfica and he arrived at the club with such a specific set of style and training as well. And I think his body, he had a lot of injuries last season, culminative injuries, different strains, muscle pulls, and in training as well, not in games, in training. So I think it was really, really hard on his body and he was just adapting to do a lot of gym work. To maybe at Benfica, he was playing a lot more with the ball. At Atleti, a lot of gym work is involved.
Gym work, not surfing.
And surfing as well, of course.
Same. not really possible in Madrid, is it, unfortunately? I think the interesting thing, when you're talking about getting used to working under Simeone, it will take time, especially for a forward player, and especially for a forward player so young. It was interesting, I wrote something for The Independent recently about Diogo Jota when he signed for Liverpool, and talking about when, you know, I know you talked, David, before about how maybe Atletico missed a trick. They've had some quite unsuccessful forward signings in recent years. They signed Diogo Jota and then
he never kicked the ball. Please try and Google image search Diogo Jota in an Atleti shirt. It's a bit of a hard find.
Yeah, that's right. And what he did say, though, I remember when he was at Porto, where he got loaned out to from Atletico Madrid, and he made it relatively clear that, like, it wasn't his cup of tea at all, like the way Atletico liked to play football with Jota. But he said it was a fascinating learning experience because he did a month and a half of pre-season with Atletico. And he said, first day, he said, you know you've been working. He said there were players like throwing up and stuff.
Jackson Martinez, I'll never ever forget. One of the best images I've ever seen was his first week in training. I think it was about his second day. And Atleti were just doing a video for social media of training and just out of shot, Jackson Martinez was at the Atleti training complex under a tree just being sick.
Oh, God.
and look, he hadn't been out the night before or anything. It was just literally, it was the first week of pre-season training. So you've been off, you've been eating, you know, parrillas and things like that and having a good time. And then you come in and then Professor Ortega, you know, is there. Basta.
Is that the fitness coach?
Yeah, yes, Professor Ortega. Okay. Yeah. So, and there's a lot of controversy about him as well. Some Atleti fans do want him out because of all the muscle injuries and such. What you know, build up over the year, but that's a discussion for another day.
But now Atletico have not just got João Felix, this wonder kid, potentially. The comparison that David made with Messi there. It depends on how he's allowed to play, I imagine.
Yes.
How he fits into the system or how the system fits into him might be another question. But I wonder whether the development of João Felix and the appearance now of Luis Suarez makes this a formidable, as the French would say, front line or not.
Yeah, I think basically that all the Atletico forwards need each other, I think, because of that heavy physical load.
Including Diego Costa, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, maybe in the next couple of days they find a way for him to leave the club.
They're trying so hard. They've been trying all summer. I think
they want Suarez rather than him.
Well, no, they want Cavani to go with Suarez as well.
Ah, I see. Okay, interesting.
So, I mean, if you're talking about hard running forwards, I mean, that would pretty much complete the set, wouldn't it?
And that's what João Felix needs ahead of him. He needs forwards who move. Costa doesn't move very much anymore.
And Suarez can't move as much as he used to.
Yeah. There's only pretty much Carrasco outside of João Felix who moves on that team, I'd say, in an aggressive manner. And yes, all the hoopla is about Luis Suarez. I completely understand that. But
hell of a debut.
Yeah, incredible. But it was possible because of João Felix. And João Felix is the most important player at that club. He's the best footballer at that club. And for me, he can be the best. Look, Eden Hazard's done for a month. So for me, that leaves a window. João Felix can be the best player in the league this season, alongside Leo Messi, for me, absolutely.
That is quite some compliment.
And it'll definitely get clipped for social media, so there's no avoiding it.
Oh, yeah, I don't mind. I'm happy to stand by it. But,
assuming
you know,
it.
Yeah, Diogo Simeone is going to completely fuck it all and me, so I'm prepared.
And just to round up this segment, is it true? Did he... Going back to that advert, did he do what that advert implied that he did to Atlanta?
Truth always hurts.
Sorry, Granada. Apologies. Granada.
Truth always hurts, doesn't it? I mean, what I said at the time is that, and what you're saying about Luis Suarez and how it's possible for him later on, like it must be the worst thing. You get the runaround from João Felix for 60-70 minutes. And then you bring on Luis Suarez. And that's what I'm talking about, like balancing what they've got in the squad. Simeone needs to use his subs really well. Mm-hmm. And that's something he's not done brilliantly in the past. He's, especially when they're hanging on to a lead, he's made quite defensive substitutions. He's not really got any excuse for that now, has he?
Absolutely. And to answer Dorton's question, sorry there, yes, all night long and then once in the morning.
indeed. I'm not going to let it end there because there is just one more quick... I can't let it end there. One more quick question. It's the right time, isn't it, for Atletico to be making a proper challenge for the Spanish league, certainly. You'd have thought that now, with Barcelona and Real Madrid going through a transition period, a generational transition period as well, this might be the season for Atletico. But will it be? And Sevilla as well, by the way.
Yeah, I think it could be. I tend to think Sevilla are maybe a top-class striker short. I think maybe that's their issue. But Barcelona started very well under Koeman against Villarreal, but they always beat Unai Emery team, so I'm not sure really how much we can judge from that. As we're recording, we've just seen Real Madrid, just squeak past Valladolid last night. And what really struck me about that, David, Valladolid weren't scared of them.
No.
At all.
The aura isn't there anymore, what Real Madrid did have. I think... You know, I always thought it was a Manchester United trait as well, when you're on top like that, that a goal...
It's not playing at the Bernabeu part of that, sorry.
I think so. But I think they went away. I think some teams looked at their bench as well and they thought, oh, okay, even if we get to 75 minutes, they can bring Isco on. They can bring other people, you know. But you know, he looks like a footballer completely just fed up with his life, you know, for instance. So they haven't got that aura anymore. You get to 75 minutes now against Real Madrid and you think, oh, I think we can see this out. I'm looking around and you're like, who's going to do something here? Who's going to change the game? Who's the game changer there? And then even on the bench as well, whether it be on the field. And I think teams now can, and that's what I mean, via the lead, you made a great point. They just didn't look scared. They just thought, we can do this.
Courtois was arguably the best player, wasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, which is staggering. And via the lead, don't get me wrong, are a nice team, but they're not an attacking side. They're pretty much defensive side first. So for them to cause that amount of problems was interesting. But to go back with what and said, we say this about Atleti every year. We also said about them in the Champions League last season as well. We said, oh, with this crazy format, this is the chance for Atleti potentially to, you know, to do it. The big sides have fallen, and they didn't. And I just worry that they're going to leave us disappointed again. And if there was one team going to challenge Real Madrid and Barcelona, it would be Sevilla, with that big caveat of they have to get a striker.
Ahí está el toque de Villa, la oportunidad ahí para el Atlético. Qué bien Villa, el balón hacia el lado izquierdo. Diego Costa que se quedó en el suelo. Villa en el remate.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Join me, Melissa Reddy, and listen to my brand new podcast, Between the Lines. I'll be speaking to the biggest names in football about the captivating, behind-the-scenes stories fans want to hear. From major talking points to untold anecdotes, you'll hear from some of football's leading stars as well as those working in the shadows. In our first episode, I spoke to former Spurs manager Maurizio Pochettino about that Amazon documentary.
We feel responsible because it was very difficult to say yes, to open the door to Amazon. Only we watched with Jesus the 25-minute first, because it was until we left the club.
And on our latest episode, I investigate how prevalent and damaging social media abuse is in football.
and I was like taking all this negativity onto myself. And I did, I kind of lost myself and my personality because I knew everything that was going on around it. And it's not until I actually got to a stage where I thought, I can't take this anymore. It is becoming too much for me, that I spoke out about it.
Craving football insight? Well, look no further. Listen to Between the Lines with me, Melissa Reddy, via Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever else you get your podcasts.
This was a Stakhanov production.
So let's pick up on another item of conversation, which is what's going on in Italy at the moment. Juventus are going to just win the league again, aren't they? They're just going to trounce everybody.
Are they? Are they?
Is there a question? Is that a question or is that rhetorical?
I think it is a question because what we've seen of Pirlo's Juventus so far is obviously a very small sample size. We've seen them batter an absolutely hopeless Sampdoria, who've been out to get a few more players since. They've been out to get Antonio Candreva and Keita Balde as well. And then Juventus like had a far harder game at Roma last weekend. And Roma, who are still in a sort of somewhat unfinished state, but they should have won that game. And Edin Dzeko, who of course almost went to Juventus, should have scored the goal to polish Juve off when they were down to 10 men. In the end, Cristiano Ronaldo came back and scored his second goal for the equaliser. But I really wanted to look at Inter because the question is not only on what Juventus do, it's on what Inter are capable of doing. Oh. Or don't do. Exactly. So far, we've had two league wins from Inter. Jobs are good against Fiorentina and Benevento.
Oh, that was a tight one against Fiorentina, though. Gosh.
But in those two, that was amazing. And we'll come back to that game in a minute. But last night, they played Benevento, who, despite the magic of Pippo Inzaghi, I think will, you know, they'll just be pleased to stay up. And Inter, yeah, they came out the traps really fast there and they played well, won 5-2 in the end. But that does mean that having played Fiorentina and Benevento, they've conceded 5 goals in 2 games, which doesn't feel particularly sustainable to me. And their defending is really quite chaotic at times. I mean, I suppose the other side of that is when you see a performance like Ashraf Hakimi's first start, as he made against Benevento, creates a goal for Lukaku inside 30 seconds. You think, well, there's going to be a lot of them this season.
Yeah. And Lukaku is probably the player of that Fiorentina match that I saw from the Inter perspective.
Yeah.
But I think what Andy says, David, is really quite pertinent, that it's what Inter don't do, maybe, that will decide the Italian championship. And you could see against Fiorentina that Fiorentina were slightly surprised, elated, obviously, but to be leading, were they 2-0 up at the beginning? Was it 2-0 initially?
1-0 up and then 3-2.
Okay, 3-2. Yeah. But they were leading Inter, very crucial points in the match. And it seemed like Inter were lucky to get that last-minute goal against them.
They have the look of a team, I think. And I think they will win the league, you know, just to put that out there.
What, Inter?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think they'll just stumble and look their way through it while Juve go through a learning curve with Pirlo. I can see them completely capitalising on the fact that Juve are finding themselves in this kind of new direction that they're taking. So I can see, and don't get me wrong, it will be a very ugly, unsatisfying kind of league win,
but the best type of title win,
yeah,
really.
But it will, but it would be a league win, and that's all that matters. I think everybody else, all the other teams in Italy, are kind of neither here nor there. You know, you've got Atlanta, who are exciting, of course. Roma, who are, you said they're in an unfinished state. I feel like they're permanently in an unfinished state.
Yeah, they're the Strada Familia of Serie A, basically.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, we're going to be finished in 2032, honestly. And then,
but we won't.
Yeah. So yeah, I feel like Inter's mentality in terms of how they operate in the market looks to me like all the eggs in the basket, everything to win this year. And if they don't, right, that's it for Conte. That's it for this kind of era, and then they'll move to a new direction. So,
I mean, I don't know what you think, but because they're assembling like quite an on the whole, and obviously you have exceptions like Lukaku is in his prime, Hakimi is going to be brilliant for years to come. But because they've invested so heavily in old players for the squad, and we saw Kolarov starting his first game, Arturo Vidal starting his first game in Benevento. And Benevento was such a shambles at the back. Vidal almost scored a back post header. That's how open they were. It does have strong Jose Mourinho into vibes.
That's what I mean. You know, it's going to be like that's what I said.
The second he walks away from it, the building behind him will crumble into like a cloud of brick dust, won't it?
Yeah. Or you can see them coming out. Oh, Conte, he set the club back 2 or 3 years with what he was doing. Maybe. And we tried to do everything for him, but he still couldn't do it. And then he'll go into the Milanese night.
Talking of old guys, though, we need to have a word for Frank Ribery.
Oh, he's still amazing. He may be old, but he's still got it.
He was just incredible in that game at San Siro. And you know, when you think for the third goal, the one that put them 3-2 up, the pass through, it's just unbelievable.
Cut through the entire pitch, half of the pitch.
He deserves a gold stake for that.
I was about to bring up the gold stakes. How is he doing this? Is it by solely being on a diet of gold steaks?
Well, the thing is, if there's one place you were going to do that, it would be Florence, wouldn't it? Yeah. Famous for its steaks. I don't know how they feel about colouring steaks in particular ways. I sense what Frankie wants, Frankie gets.
Yeah.
Is he earning good money? Frankie.
Is he earning good money there? He's the top earner of Fiorentina, still on a big wage. Yeah. He hasn't exactly.
Yes, he is, although he took a cut from what he was on at Bayern. I mean, he could have gone to the Middle East. Made himself a load of money, but he decided he wanted to play for a competitive team in a competitive league.
Why did he never come to the Premier League? Out of interest, I mean, even when he went to Bayern after the World Cup, I think, where he did very well, you wondered, well, hang on a second, why are you going to Bayern rather than the Spanish league or the Italian league, one of the top teams, the Premier League?
Well, he had so many moments, Dotton, where he could have left Bayern, and it was maybe a consideration. I think it's something that's quite underrated about Bayern, that it's quite a family club. And that's something that he really felt. They were patient with him while it took him 3-4 years to learn German.
As well, though, didn't he, with Iron Robin as well?
Yeah, they did. They were very much like brothers, arguing like cat and dog, yet propelling the team with their two enormous egos as well, which was fantastic. But The fact that competitive spirit is still really alive in Ribery, I love. Because the fact that he could have made himself a fortune, but no, he comes to Fiorentina, you know, which is a real, like, it's a real football fan's choice, isn't it, to go to Fiorentina. He steps off the plane, onto the tarmac, and he says, "Thanks for having me. I'm really delighted to be here," in Italian. And, you know, there's this, but I think especially with Ribery, there's this, like image that's followed him around his whole career, as if he's a bit thick. And I think that's what he resented, actually, with the whole gold stake thing, because he got really bolshy about that. And he's like, to hell with you, it's my money. And I think that what he feels is, particularly in France, and French society can be quite classist, that he thinks, you think I'm, because I'm from a state in Boulogne, I'm trash. You know, I don't have the right to do this. Well, actually, I'll do what I want.
You actually are absolutely right. And that is the premise of the kind of La Haine film, that era of movie making that came about. The one thing, though, as we round up this segment of the programme, you know, we started off talking about, or at least, David, you were talking about João Felix's wonder pass, as it were, the way that he curved the ball around in an almost impossible angle. When I look at that pass for that goal for Fiorentina by Ribery, I can't see any pass beating that this season. And it shows just how fine the margins are, because when he passes the ball and cuts diagonally across half of the entire pitch, all the striker has got to do is lob it over the keeper at that point, and the keeper gets a hand to it. And there was one moment like, no! Oh, thank goodness it was a goal.
Please,
otherwise, we wouldn't be talking about that pass.
Have some aesthetic decency.
Exactly. Otherwise, we wouldn't be talking about that pass, would we?
It's a bit like when Ryan Shawcross tried to clear Zlatan Ibrahimovic's overhead kick off the line.
Good comparison.
Outrageous behaviour.
That's a good comparison.
It's the sort of behaviour that gets you never picked for England again.
So, gentlemen, Unless there's any other business, can I prompt you to give us your games of the week?
It's all about the games of the week, isn't it? I'm going to go for Lyon versus Marseille. I think there's a lot going on here because there's quite a nastiness in these games between Lyon and Marseille, even though they're not one another's top rivals.
No, for
Lyon, the main rivalry is Saint-Etienne, and for Marseille, the main rival is Paris Saint-Germain. And you know, we've just
a long
about,
way away from Marseille. They could have had an easier rivalry with Nice or something like that.
Exactly, but it's a battle for the soul of France, of course, when those two play together. But,
vive la France!
But there is a lot of hate between Lyon and Marseille, and neither of them are in the best nick at the moment. Lyon having this squad restructuring. I think they've done quite well in this transfer market, actually, because they've got rid of a lot of the chaff around the squad, which I think particularly in this market is quite difficult to do. Obviously, that could change in the next couple of days. There could still be a move for Usem Aouar. There could still be a move for Geoffrey Adelaide, who, in the words of Damian Lillard, scared of the grind, and maybe could be heading for.
Well, share the joke. I missed that one.
Well, Damian Lillard of the Portland Trailblazers dropped on Paul George after he ragged him.
Wrong continent, mate.
That he was scared of the grind for moving teams, and like he had a tough first season. Rain Adelaide got loads of talent, former Arsenal youth player, but basically he was annoyed that as soon as he got fit, he didn't get straight back in the team. And he did this sniffy interview on international duty. He said, "Right, well, I don't really see myself here anymore, actually." So we're going to see. It looks like Ren, who he wanted to go to, aren't prepared to go the full way for him. So his offer is from Hertha, which, you know, it's a nice, ambitious club, but not what he dreamed of in the first place. Anyway, they've got in Lucas Paquetá, who had a good start after coming from Flamengo to Milan, but didn't really work out in the end. Obviously, he's brought in by Juninho. There are other Brazilian players around him. He's good mates with Bruno Guimarães, who plays in midfield with Lyon. So there are opportunities for him to get somewhere. But quite how Lyon are going to look, Rudy Garcia, their coach, is really under the pump. Former Marseille coach, never liked by the fans. And then you've got Marseille, who had that raucous win at Paris Saint-Germain, the first time they've beaten them in nearly 9 years. You had those five players sent off in the brawl at the end. They've kind of over-celebrated it since. In three home games since, they've lost one and come within a whisker of losing the other two, which they've both drawn. So a bit of the wind has come out of their sails. And of course, we had this news yesterday from the Neymar and Alvaro Gonzalez contretemps during that game and at the end of that game, that neither of them are going to be punished for the alleged racial insults. And of course, it was counter-alleged.
And homophobic, apparently.
Yeah, by Neymar. And it was alleged, counter-alleged by Marseille that Hiroki Sakai, the Japanese right-back of Marseille, had been racially abused by Neymar.
Yeah. That was weird.
Do you think they're just ducking it here, by the way, the French FA? They don't want to make a decision, oh, this is how much you should get for homophobia, this is how much you should get for racism. Do you think it's a decision they just don't want to make, so they thought, right, just clear everybody, let's just try and move on.
They've got a bad record on this. Like I said before, there was a few issues with abuse directed towards Mario Balotelli, and they didn't deal with that well at all. I mean, what they've put forward is that the video evidence isn't watertight.
Yeah,
And I understand where they're coming from, but there is like a deep sense of frustration amongst some fans in France and amongst some media people as well, that it's not been dealt with. And there is quite a feeling clinging to it of maybe when it got to the point where Neymar was going to get punished as well, they don't want the superstar of the championship to be banned.
I'm not sure it's entirely about that because, you know, although all football associations in Europe, on the continent, and here in the UK as well, have got a lot to answer for in dealing with issues, yes, these sensitive issues. But it's a really frustrating one. You know, in one of the most difficult legal, in the courtroom, legal challenges to face is when there are three different parties who were put up as defendants, mm-hmm, and they all have a different perspective on
absolutely.
The same thing.
Absolutely.
There's not much you can do. You know, people get away with murder, literally, in our courts when there are three different opinions, because then where does the court go? If there's two people, one argument against another, when you throw in a third person, as Quentin Tarantino knows from his standoff, his gun standoffs, where do you go to? Do you turn left or do you turn right?
Yeah, it is difficult. But either way, it means Alvaro, who is hugely important to André Villas-Boas from Marseille, is allowed to play on, and we'll see how he and Marseille get on at Lyon this weekend, because it's going to be a bad look for whoever loses that.
So Lyon and Marseille, Andy's match of the weekend.
Mm-hmm. Sunday night.
Sunday night. So what's your match of the week then, David?
Sunday, October 4th, 8 p.m, Barcelona versus Sevilla.
This feels like a two-screen setup sort of business to me.
You lucky people.
Yeah.
There you go. The red zone's going to be on at the same time as well, so it's going to be three screens for me, so it's going to be a busy night.
You need to get yourself an extra iPad.
Yeah, I think that's going to happen. But yeah, it's an interesting game. Rakitic going back to Barcelona the first time. And also we get to see how serious Sevilla are about this push. Because in previous years, I think there's been games like this when you're like, all right, this is the time, Atleti can capitalize on Barcelona or Real Madrid's form indecision at the moment. So it'll be interesting. And hopefully, not that I want to see Barcelona get beat or anything, I've got one particular, side here, but it would be good to see Sevilla get that win and just really say, right, there's going to be more to the league this year. I think it'll set up some intrigue.
It's good for the competition if they don't win.
I think it's really good. It'll Barcelona's just in such a vulnerable position right now. All levels, off the field, on the field. They don't really know where they are. Sevilla, complete opposite. The identity that's been carved out by Julen Lopetegui and Monchi together, working together. The team very clear in their ideas. Like myself and Andy have just said, they're probably short of a striker. But other than that, they look very, very good. So show us how good you are. Don't let us down.
Excellent. Thanks very much. What a pleasure.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously,
man. Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we're way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. Why One Question Time is a Stack production.